Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk Podcast. I'm Pat Boyle from NBC Sports Chicago with 2010 Stanley Cup champion Adam Burrish. Burr, what is going on?
What's up, PB?
Well, I'll tell you what, man. I like Saturday's performance against Capitals. I mean, what was there not to like? 7-1, seven different goal scores. The power play got it going again. Forsberg looked good. This performance against the Kings, I was stunned. You got any explanation on how you could? And it, I mean, it's not like it's back to backs. I mean, what's the deal with what we saw Monday night?
I don't know. I mean, you think after a game like that, you'd come out with some jam and some fire and some excitement, and they were outshot 11-2 halfway through the first period, which tells me that they were just flat. I don't know if they thought because they scored seven against the Capitals, who are, you know, certainly one of the better teams in the East, that they could just show up because they're the Blackhawks and just roll onto the ice against the Kings. Listen, this is a heavy, kind of mean, nasty. It's always a tough game when you play the Kings, and I would always say it's a man's game when you play against the Kings with the style that they play. It's never a fancy game with them. It's in your face. They chip pucks in, they crash and bang, and they get them back. And if you're not sharp against the Kings and you don't have to play with a lot of speed, they just wear you down. It's like a heavyweight fight against those guys. And I don't know why they'd have the kind of start they did against the Kings. I'm sure that Quenneville and that coaching staff's got to be pretty disappointed.
So let's focus on the trade deadline, which is February 26th, Monday. It'll wrap up at 2:00 Chicago time. Who, you know, they trade Kempney on Monday to Washington. They pick up a conditional third round. So the way it stands now is they have a first round pick. They don't have a second round pick. They've got two third round picks, no fourth round, two fifth rounds, and a sixth round. So they're kind of setting themselves up, trying to grab more draft picks. Who could also be on that trading block besides obviously Kempney, who's already been moved?
I think you could probably say just about anybody, unless your name's Kane. Probably Schmaltz. You know, Duncan Keith isn't going anywhere. You know, Taves. But other than that, I mean, you see what they did with Kempney, and that's usually what you see leading up to the trade deadline are some depth players that maybe a team that is trying to go deep in the playoffs. The teams always want depth, and they kind of address what areas of depth you want. Maybe it's a penalty killer. Maybe it's a depth defenseman. You know, in Washington's case with Kempney, they did it the last 2 years, adding depth defensemen. They never ended up using, but you can never have too many NHL-ready defensemen. If you get one that gets knocked out, you don't want to have to go into your minor league team and have a guy that's played 10 or 12 games. So Kempney would fit a guy like that. So you could see, you know, a Jan Ruta or these kind of guys in the next few days if teams would want them move. And then as you get closer, a day or two, and certainly the day of trade deadline, or when you see the marquee names get moved. So, I mean, you still certainly look at a guy like Tommy Wingos would be a trade deadline guy because he's a veteran guy that can play up and down your lineup. He's played a lot of his career in the top six and in San Jose. He can play on the power play that they're showing right now, certainly probably showcasing him a little bit there, getting him playing with Taves and Saad a little bit. That's a showcase move, and yet he has earned that time also, how hard he's played. But that's what you're seeing with him, and he could be a guy that you could see get traded, and then I'd be surprised if the Hawks wouldn't try and re-sign him for what great job he's done this year, and we've talked about that on the show, PB. But those are the kind of names that would stick out to me as names that, you know, Anisimov is certainly a guy that I know teams have been calling the Hawks about. I've seen a lot of scouts.
You bring that up, so let's talk about Anisimov. Right now he's got a no-movement clause, but that changes next year to a limited or a modified no trade, which usually means the team contacts you. You've got 24 hours to submit. Sometimes it's 10, whatever number of teams that you'd be willing to go to. So the thought would be if next year, and meaning this summer, they could go to him and move him, maybe he would be willing to move that up a month or so with this regular season. So, you know, you look at it from that standpoint, with Anisimov making, you know, around $4.5 million a year, and he still, after this year, has 3 years left on his deal. Do you think they'd have to eat some money, or do you think that a team that would acquire him would find him, you know, a $4.5 million guy?
Yeah, no, I you know, from seeing different scouts around the United Center and asking some of them questions, I think most of them would tell you that if they were to get a deal for Anisimov, they would probably have to ask the Hawks to eat some of that salary still. Now, you know, maybe the deal works out where you get a second round pick for him and maybe a high prospect or a certain prospect, and you don't have to eat the money. I mean, every deal can be worked out differently, but I'm certainly would have to guess that a team would like them to eat some of that salary. But, you know, people are always like, well, what about all these guys with no movement or no trade clauses? They can't go anywhere. Well, that's not true. You see guys with no movement, no trade clauses get moved all the time, and that's exactly how it happens, where teams go to you and they just ask you to do it. And listen, you don't want to be on a team that doesn't want you, and these guys are proud. And so when a team comes and asks you to do that, guys with no trade clauses, usually they just cooperate because they're saying, if you don't want me, I certainly don't want to be here. I don't want to look foolish, and I don't want to get in a fight with you guys. You guys have made your point. You guys have shown your cards that you don't want me here anymore. So I'm going to give you a list of teams that would make me happy. So now I control the cards again. Now I control what's going to happen. I'm going to force your hand a little bit, and usually that's why you see those guys go to teams that are going to contend for Stanley Cups. And if you're Anisimov, you're looking, well, I'm certainly not going to win a Stanley Cup in Chicago this year. So I'm going to pick a team, and I'm going to give you a list of 8-10 teams that I think have a chance, and we'll kind of mutually part ways, and that's usually how that plays out.
One guy who does not have a no-movement clause or a no-trade clause is Brandon Saad, making $6 million a year after this season. He's got 3 years left on his deal. He's 25. There's talk that, you know, he'd be somebody that they're shopping. Here's my concern. You're shopping him low right now. Mm-hmm. You know, he's only got 27 points in 59 games. You're probably going to have to eat some of that. And it would be interesting. You talk about a tough pill to swallow. You trade him for a top 10 scorer in the Breadman, Panarin. And then you turn around and deal him, all of a sudden that Panarin deal is now for whatever you're getting back with Saad, when part of the reason was you wanted control, you wanted to jumpstart Johnny, you wanted a younger guy, it just hasn't worked out. So I wonder if, like, his stock is even too low to try to deal to recoup some of what he's worth.
Yeah, I get that argument. I think if you were to ask around the NHL, I think most people would still say this has been an off year for him. I think you would still certainly have a lot of teams that would be excited to get a Brandon Saad, who is still a young player in this league, who some would probably say still hasn't hit the prime of his career age-wise yet.
Won two cups.
Yeah, he's won two cups. He certainly can be a 30-goal scorer in this league. So I don't think you would – teams would judge him based on what he's done the last 3 months in Chicago. Nobody's looked good on this team other than maybe Kane has looked great the entire season. Other than that, you could say, well, what is everybody have no value? I don't buy into that that perception. But I also would think that I don't know what's going on behind closed doors upstairs in this organization. I know that when teams miss playoffs, everybody gets evaluated. That's the general manager. That's the coach. That's the assistant coach. That's the video coach. That's the strength coach. Everybody will get evaluated harsher than you do if you make the playoffs or if you go two or three rounds. So then it goes back all the way to the top, where they're going to have to make a decision. How much are we going to let happen to this team if we are going to make changes here? And so, again, Stan Bowman has said he's not going to make a lot of huge splashes and be a huge buyer. So if the deal is right, that can benefit the team and not really make a lasting impact where it could hamper things further down the line, then I think they would make it. But I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see any big moves, because they want to make some big evaluations at the end of the year.
You've touched on this already. Some guys that are, you know, I would say close to being untradeable. Kane certainly is at the top of that list. Of the guys, the younger guys that you kind of see as building blocks for the future, DeBrincat would obviously be in that conversation. Schmaltz would be in that conversation. I think Hinostroza is in that conversation, or at least he's approaching it. Ryan Hartman, I go back and forth on. Beginning of this year, I thought, yeah, I just like with this guy. I love his versatility. He's got a little jam to his game. He, you know, they ask him to play a physical game, which may not totally be, you know, his MO. He goes out and does it, accepts it, executes it. But he's kind of caught in that, you know, limbo where, you know, like between asking him to do something and then, you know, what he is. So I don't know where Hartman is in the big picture. And then, you know, Connor Murphy would be another guy that, man, if the Saad Panarin deal didn't work out, the Jalmerson Murphy deal doesn't look like it worked out at all. At $3.85 million, Connor Murphy he's been a 5-6 at best pretty much all season.
No, and he's a guy, if you're just calling it as it is, if they could move him, I'm sure they certainly would. And you could slide in a younger defenseman that's not playing right now for the Hawks. And, I mean, to be fair, Dahlstrom can probably do what Connor Murphy can do. He's not as physical. I do like Connor Murphy's physical presence. When his game is on and he's sharp with the puck and he's reliable with the puck, that physical presence he brings is something other than Seabrook. They don't have a guy that brings that jam and that bite and can have those big neutral zone hits and can make other teams uncomfortable. The thing with him all season has been his consistency, and he still is a young defenseman, and he's probably a year or two or away from having that consistent effort every night, and he'll get there hopefully. But if some team were to come and say that they recognize his physicality and that he's still approaching his prime and they would like to get him, I think the Hawks would jump at it. And I think with Hartman, you know, if I can stick up for Hartman, it would be that I think at times he doesn't know which player he should be, because he does go out there and he gets in a fight and he hits a guy and then he gets scratched the next night. And I've been there as a player, where they're asking more physically of you and they want you to be that angry kind of pest out there.
Because there's not many on the team.
Because there's none. There's two.
Exactly, I mean, right.
You know, most nights there's none, and he goes out there and does it, and then they scratch him the next night. And as a player, you can say, it's not a bad attitude when he's like, all right, well, I went out there and I fought and I hit five guys, I had six hits, and I blocked some shots, then you're going to scratch me the next night. Well, all right, I'm going to go out there and dangle next game. You want me to be a dangler? I'm going to dangle then. You want me to be physical, but I get scratched when I'm physical. So at times, for a young player, it's hard to find that balance. And if to stick up for him, I think he's been caught in the middle that way. I still think that a good team, he would be a very valuable bottom six role player for a team, and he's going to play a lot of years in the NHL because he can play that top six role. You and I talked about a PB comparing him a little bit to Tommy Wingles, who for San Jose played on the second power play for 4 years. He played up and down the lineup. He can kill penalties. He can play on the power play. I think Ryan Hartman has more skill than Tommy Wingles. You saw the goal, the awesome kind of almost coast-to-coast score he scored against the Capitals, where he just dangled three guys through the neutral zone and then had a nice forehand, backhand,
beautiful
top-shelf goal. So he has that in his game, and he can also play physical and nasty and mean and run guys over. So he's going to have a long career in that, you know, in that second, third, fourth line role. So he has nothing to worry about there. But he's a guy that I think a team that's making a run at it could look at him and say, hey, this guy could be a valuable guy. Because say a guy on our second power play gets hurt, we can throw him in there. If we need some jam up there to play with our top six, we can throw Hartman up there. So he's a guy I think teams in the next week or so will be watching this Hawks team and really evaluating him too, because he is a valuable player.
He's a restricted free agent as well. Okay, got a couple more things here before we close up here the latest podcast. Do you have a memorable trade deadline day when you were with the Blackhawks? You know, we always talk about guys, you know, getting the call and moving on quickly. Is there one that stands out most when you wore the Indian head sweater?
Yeah, well, there was a couple. The one, it was my first full year in the NHL, and it was my first trade deadline day. And there was a guy, Marty Lapointe, who was, for me, one of the best teammates I always played with.
He was a captain for a while.
He was a captain of the Hawks. Yeah, he was just a fantastic guy. You know, he's scouting for the Montreal Canadiens now. He's back in Chicago quite a bit. He's made his home here in Chicago. But so it was my first trade deadline. I didn't know what the heck was going on. And we're out there just practicing business as usual. And I was on a line with Marty Lapointe. And all of a sudden, practice is going on. And next thing, we're doing a line drill. And I look over, and just two of us skate out. I'm like, where the heck's Marty? And they go, didn't you see him get pulled off the ice? And I said, no. And Tony Oman, the Hawks, you know, player services guy, had come over to the door, I guess, and waved. And I just kind of see, you know, waves Marty Lapointe off. And I thought nothing of it. You know, I was always getting a new skate or his skate's dull. And they said, I have no idea what's going on. Practice gets done. Hey, where's Marty? Well, he didn't hear. He got traded. You know, his stuff was already packed. His equipment was gone. His locker was cleared. Didn't even get a chance to say bye to him. I mean, that's how fast it happens. They call him off the ice, goes home, packs a suitcase, and he was on a flight to get traded that day and went and played the next day for a new team. And so that's how fast it really happens. The other one for me personally was I was playing in Dallas, and it was actually my first year in Dallas. And my agent had called and said, you know, we've been talking with the Hawks, and we think we have a deal done to get you traded back for the Hawks. And we had just flown to Chicago to play the Hawks that night. And Mike Havlin was the assistant coach, and in the pregame skate, he goes, are you ready to come back?
Wow.
And, you know, I had teammates from Dallas sitting there, and I was so pumped this could be happening maybe, because I wanted to come back to Chicago. And, you know, I was a little uncomfortable that, you know, I'm hearing this in front of my teammates, so I had to kind of play it cool. And I go, it was the morning skate. I go back to the hotel, my agent calls again. He's like, it's close to happening. Your general manager, who was Joe Neuendijk at the time for the Stars, had kind of said, well, we're going to wait and see how this game goes. It was the day before the trade deadline, and he had said that if we win this game, we would be in a playoff spot. So if we become a playoff team by the trade deadline, he's going to make no moves. And it was Steve Ott and I were the two guys that were going to possibly get moved. We end up beating the Hawks that night. The Dallas Stars made no moves at the trade deadline, and we still missed the playoffs at the end of the year. So needless to say, I couldn't say it at the time, but I was pretty bummed out that I didn't get a chance to come back and get traded at the Hawks. But that's how weird it could have been that he goes, Adam, he goes, you could be traded before the game and end up being a Blackhawks by the time the game starts. So it's a stressful time. It's a kind of an uncomfortable time. Everybody plays it cool. Like, I don't care what's going on. Nothing's going to happen. Business as usual. But everybody's on their phones that day. Everybody's got their phones out. Their agents are calling. If you're one of those guys, you know if your name is in the hat as a possible trade guy. And so you're on your phone all day.
All right. With the trade deadline Monday, do you have a bold trade deadline prediction for us? The Adam Burrish sort of bold trade deadline prediction.
Oh, man. I mean, it's hard because Stan Bowman has said he's not going to do much. But if I'm going to be bold and you're going to twist my arm, I'm going to say the Blackhawks move Anisimov at the trade deadline. Wow. So that would be if they're going to make a big move. I think that would certainly, if you move a top six guy, it's always considered a big move. And I think he'd be a guy that a Stanley Cup team would be interested in as a second or third line checking big-bodied centerman that can play power play and penalty kill. So I think teams would have interest in him. And so if I've got to make a prediction, I'd say a bold one. I think Anisimov would be a bold one.
All right, we'll see what happens. Great stuff as always. Thanks for joining us on the podcast this week.
You got it, PB.
That's going to do it for Adam Burrish. I'm Pat Boyle. Thanks for listening to the Hawks Talk podcast, and we'll catch you next time.